Hey there, and welcome back after a short break to PhDcast. We took a break last week. We were all phenomenally busy. But this week we're back, and it's all about digital. Joining podcast regulars Stu and Nick is Team Digital here at PhD Sydney. Peter Hunter and Lauren Oldham. We're covering programmatic buying. Machines are coming. And we're also going to talk about innovation from Gillette. And of all places, the Australian Bureau of Statistics. And that purchase of Tumblr by Yahoo. This is the PhDcast. So, welcome to the podcast. Joining me this week is podcast regular Stuart Gurney.
Hello.
And Nicola Davey.
Hello.
And also joining us are Team Digital from here, PhD Sydney, is Peter Hunter.
G'day.
And Lauren Oldham.
Hello.
How is everyone doing?
Good, thank you.
Good.
Everyone had a good week?
Really good, yeah.
Highlights of the week for anyone in particular?
Oh, the great Gatsby party that we had. That one was very exciting.
Do you want to talk about that quickly?
Really quickly. Everyone got really drunk.
Don't talk quickly. But talk about it over a short space.
Okay, sorry. Well, key headlines, very exciting. Everyone wore very amazing costumes, 1920s and 30s. And everyone drank a lot. Perfect media combination.
Brilliant. It sounds like the olden days of media.
Exactly.
Crikey, I remember media parties. Were you there, Nick?
I was. It was awesome. Some lethal cocktails called a Manhattan that actually sent me home. So, yeah, it was good.
Oh, well done. Manhattan, my favourite cocktail. Fact. So, first up this week, programmatic buying. I have news reports, the machines are coming, but they come in peace. According to an iMedia conference a week before last, picked up on the emerging theme of programmatic buying and its impact on the industry. According to eMarketer, more than a quarter of all display ad spending in the US will occur via real-time auctions by 2016, with spend going from $1.9 billion in 2012 to over $7 billion, making up 28% of total display ad buying, and it's not going to stop on TV. Peter, Lauren, tell us, first of all, what is programmatic buying and what is the debate all about?
So programmatic buying allows us to buy audience real-time as they appear in various places in the media landscape. What programmatic buying also allows us to do is compete for an impression or compete for somebody's eyeballs. So it's an open priced auction. So the nice thing that it does in digital is it values great content that get great people, and we then basically pay the price that's relevant in the market to put our brand in front of that person. So that's kind of programmatic buying as it sits in the digital world.
So it's almost like taking the pay model for search, in that what's more valuable is paid more, and applying that into a broad display kind of world.
Yeah, that's dead right. So what we're seeing is we pay higher money for great content that have a great audience. So it's very similar to search.
Of course, we see probably a bit of a long tail effect in display inventory.
Yes, we do. Cool. Yes.
So Lauren, what's the main impact that it's having on agencies and how we do what we do?
It's allowing us to be more effective with our advertising for our clients, because they aren't necessarily having to buy out a homepage takeover on a, I'll just go generic here, on a portal site, where maybe 50% of that audience is actually wastage. We can actually target specifically to who we're trying to reach out to. So it makes advertising more efficient and also allows us to be a little bit more, innovative in how we invest.
So what are the limitations? I mean, is this something that will eventually cover all online advertising? Is it something that has got a natural limit to what we can do, or is it now full steam ahead and just get everything we can onto automated trading platforms?
Yeah, I think it's a very effective way for us to be buying traditional banner inventory. I don't see that it will be all spend, in a sense that we'll see more content integration with brands, and how brands get involved more in content. Which is not about buying space around content, it's about what we're doing now around buyouts is putting inventory around content, but what premium will start to become is much more integrated. So I think programmatic buying will become the vehicle of how we buy traditional ad spaces, but the market will move quickly into content.
I think it's quite interesting. I think there was just an article the other day from the US with Huffington Post allowing like content to be added in. I can't remember who did the deal. It was some agency group over there, and I remember thinking that it was really interesting because it's a totally different way to kind of use programmatic buying, sort of. It's like, it's not necessarily programmatic, like it's not auction-based because it's only one agency group at the moment. But they are allowing you basically to buy the content space and add in content direct. So I think that there might be a future for it, but it's definitely not at mass now. Like right now you can do video, mobile, and you know, PC display and mobile, display as well. So I just think that's, it'll be potentially interesting to watch how that goes in the future.
Do you think that's ever really like viable? Just because like surely the content integration requires planning, thinking, and real people to come up with the ideas first and foremost. So I can see how an automated system around content just is like insert brand name here, which I don't think actually is content, it's just then display against some words.
That's why I think it'll be really interesting to watch what happens with the Huffington Post, because you'd want it to look like it's a post, but
yeah,
you wouldn't also be able to necessarily monitor that since it is going in real time. So I think it's very interesting to watch what happens in that space.
And how does this change the relationship, the dynamic between agencies and those people in those media organisations and partners, the salespeople with whom we work? How are those relationships and going to change and evolve as programmatic buying takes hold?
I think it changes the conversation massively. So it becomes less about cost and becomes more about ideas and more about content and more about creativity, which is, as we are finding as we're moving forward, the best ideas, best campaigns are coming from collaboration that starts really early. So I think that it means that they'll probably have to find different skills, and it's not just going to be the best brashy salesperson that's going to be the one to win. It's going to be those people that can really add value to their media brands and come up with the right ideas.
Which arguably is what great relationships between agencies and salespeople have actually always been about. It's about collaboration, coming up with great ideas and making the work and the ideas for clients come before and make that the basis of the conversation, right?
Yeah, but we also know that in reality what happens is that similarly to when we're pitching, for example, and we might have we might be told that we might have the best strategy or the best idea, but it comes down to remuneration. We know that
never happens.
No, in a rose-tinted world. But we also know from chatting with our industry friends that sometimes it will come down to it, and they just can't get their CPMs low enough. So again, they miss out because their ideas miss out because ultimately they can't get their CPMs low enough. And that's the kind of conversation that I'm having with people more from, a strategy and ideas point of view, is their frustrations come with, look, we work with you, we collaborate with you, we come up with great ideas, we don't get on the plan because it becomes a ranking list of CPM, so we're blown out.
Yeah.
I think the relationship and part of what will happen with programmatic buying is, as an agency, we're all about the right message in the right place at the right time. And what programmatic buying is starting to do is be able to target audience. So now it's extending and it's saying it's about, and the conversation we have with publishers is not just right message in the right place at the right time, it's now on the right device, within the right content, in the right place, at the right time, at the right stage in the purchase funnel. So we're just having much more detailed conversations about what inventory is where. So it's just more detail around more data. It's changing that relationship dramatically, but and those conversations are in and around data.
And it doesn't, of course, stop in online. So PhD's very own 2016, available on Amazon.com, all proceeds go to UNICEF, predicts that 50% of TVs will be connected to the internet by 2014, which means that programmatic buying won't just stop in online, it'll become the domain of potentially how we start to trade in TV spots as well. What are the kind of implications as programmatic buying and automated trading and real-time bidding cascades into other channels?
I think it's the best thing that could possibly happen to the media industry because it starts to get rid of all of a lot of the mundane tasks that we end up having to do in the longer tail of our jobs and actually puts the onus back onto proper thinking, proper planning, proper creativity, which will help us in the long term. And then it becomes less about commoditized remuneration. It becomes about actually our roles and our jobs, about ideas, and that becomes the trade-off, and that becomes the important factor that differentiates agencies. So I think it's an awesome thing.
I think it's going to be fantastic for the industry just based off of what you've just said, because if that actually does happen, it'll be all about strategy, because everyone that graduates wants to be a strategist, and it becomes more about the thinking and the ideas rather than just sitting in Excel or BMD and loading numbers all day. So that can't be, you know, we might actually have people to choose from rather than desperate to hunt down somebody to fill your spot.
I think it's going to be really interesting for the media, the TV industry, for example, who haven't been particularly brilliant at embracing a lot of change, and especially kind of digital space. So to have this new model could really, really change things up for them. And actually, I think what they require is quite a lot of change and a bit of difference to start getting them to think differently about their own products and their own content. So I think it's actually going to be an awesome thing just for media in general, both for consumers and for us as an industry.
How do we... I'm just going to ask a question. Sorry, Chris, I'm going to take over a second. How do we... how long do you think it'll actually take the Australian TV marketplace to kind of get to this point? Because coming from the US, I know there's so many more channels and stations and holding companies that want to compete with each other and become future facing, whereas what I've seen, and I'm obviously not a TV buyer, but what I've seen and observed, it doesn't look like TV, free to air, doesn't really like to move into the future too much, and the pay TV channels seem to be, this is kind of where they're moving a little bit further, but there's still only, 30% of the population that have paid TV in Australia, so how much of an influence will their move into this actually have on free-to-air, which is what really is the...
Yeah, I don't imagine it will happen overnight. It will be literally moving last years, but like you said, MCN, I think, are actually experimenting like demand-side platforms and how that would integrate with their own proposition. And I think you're right, it will be digital and STV that will drive this. Mm-hmm. But once that starts to happen, there's proven results, which there will be, because you'll be able to do things more efficiently, you'll have more time to spend on more integration ideas. So already you kind of see MCN really excelling in that space. So if you can get rid of all of the longer tail of time-consuming stuff, spend more time creating more partnerships and doing more interesting things on that channel, that's got to mean that the free-to-air stations will have to kind of look up and go, that's got to be a model we want to adopt sooner rather than later. I think in this market it's really interesting because obviously consumer behaviour around digital is really advanced, so massive smartphone penetration, those kind of things, and because of that kind of consumer behaviour, that will have to drive a lot of that quicker and speed the process along.
Yeah, I agree. I think this train is very much on the tracks. The direction of the travel is very much in place. I think we will see an awful lot of inertia in some of those more traditional media owner players. But I think, to Stu's point, I think that once we see the efficiencies, once we see this working, it'll become largely inevitable. I also think as they start to develop multi-platform strategies and as we see much better multi-platform offerings from traditional players, they're going to need this just to get better monetization across all the platforms they're offering. So I think that the once they become less traditional TV-only organisations and become more genuinely channel agnostic, then this will be a huge asset that will help them extract maximum value from all the platforms they have.
I think the other thing is for programmatic buying to start to hit television, you've got to get various things such as ad serving technology. So we're going to quickly get to the point where we're going to understand the true value of television against other channels. And I think once we see that data, it'll drive the change, because we all do know inherently that television delivers, you know, against awareness incredibly well. We're going to start to monetize that and show that effect and how it works with other channels. So there might be inertia, but I also believe that it'll start to value television and show that it actually has a really large role to play in the overall comms mix.
I mean, you are right, because that is, I mean, when you look at like Barbie UK and Oztown here, the actual number of survey and the amount of money that goes through that is ridiculous. So we're actually only measuring a very small percentage of the population, and that accounts for 100% of the billings of that media channel. So if there needs to be an overhaul of the data that we get around how we measure that and track that, absolutely. If we became as accountable in other channels as we are online, then that'd be awesome. And I think there's examples of the US, actually, like Google TV, kind of linking that back to an actual behavioural data and exposure, linking that back to some hardcore metrics. If we can get to that level of data sophistication in TV, then that would be awesome for us, and then that would just change, would just happen.
I think it'll prove what we already inherently know.
My final thought on that is, when we were talking about free-to-air and the pay and subscription TV, is I think as our clients and as marketers get more used to us being able to prove the effectiveness, if the pay channels are, you know, more future-facing, having the right ad-serving technology, you know, have first-mover advantage in doing that, then that is what marketeers are going to be expecting out of their agencies. And so the free-to-air guys have got no chance, but they have to, you know, step up their game, otherwise marketers are just going to be like, I'm going to go where I've got the most effectiveness.
Very cool. Moving on to other news in digital this week. If you go along to howdoeshe.com, Gillette are asking us and various other celebrities just exactly how does Superman shave? An interesting platform, YouTube integration, obviously there from Gillette. And what do we make of this?
I just love it. I think it's the geeky side of me that absolutely just thinks this is a great integration, because it takes part of the new movie, which I haven't actually seen any of the trailers, but they explain it on the website that the beginning of the movie, sorry, spoiler alert, the beginning of the movie, he has a beard, and then at the end of the movie, he doesn't, and I just...
Lauren, spoilers! SupermanShaves.com. Hashtag.
And I think it's just a really cute pickup that Gillette took from that. So it's not just a standard, hey, we've got Superman branded stuff. I feel like it's really taken advantage of, like, kind of the movie and what's coming out. And I absolutely love that they got real science, famous scientists and people who are known to be in the
Blossom is not a famous scientist.
She is actually a PhD in neuroscience.
We were debating that. Is that actually true?
Oh, maybe not. I don't know.
Because it's
on YouTube
in the video.
It's not clear from the video, but
okay,
I just went, okay, I'll believe it.
We'll try and get that information before the end of the PhD cast. If anyone knows, if we don't manage to find it, let us know.
Fine.
Hashtag
she plays a smart
PhD
person
Australia.
On TV.
If you know the answer, tweet us at PhD Australia. It's a smart integration, right? Do you think this sponsorship came about because of the beard, or do you think they had it anyway and they just activated it really well?
Because of the, what do you mean, sorry?
Well, do you think they've approached the sponsorship in order to do this idea, or do you think it's like, we want to connect with Superman? This is a really good activation to do it. Either way, I think it's a great smart way of doing it.
Yeah, well, I think that they're all about, sounds really dumb saying it, but they're all about the clean shave, aren't they? So if that is going to be one of the big story reveals in a very hyped up movie, then
I hope it's not a major plot.
Yeah.
I hope there's a little more going on.
Something
like
a
that.
Bit more going on than he shaves. probably not. Then I just think, you know, as a brand that's always been about keeping men clean shaven and blah blah blah, and knowing the kind of issues that they've had with some of the sporting stars that, you know, refuse to shave and all that. And so I just think it's a really awesome tactical
association.
Yeah.
It's great use of YouTube as well.
It's a very slick.
It's a very smart social play where they've kind of put the brand in the space and then and let everybody run with it. It is a really lovely little execution of how to do social effectively.
I think it's a great idea. I think it evolves a little bit too much from people, maybe. Like, it's a... I just wonder if that idea would have been just a better leveraged in more traditional media, like broadcast, because actually it's quite a nice idea. And I don't think you need to socialise it, actually.
It doesn't preclude that. It doesn't preclude amplifying some of the best ones in
yeah.
broadcast.
Yeah, okay. In isolation, it's all right.
All right. And breaking news, from her IMDb page, she was awarded her bachelor's degree in 2000 and began reading for a PhD in neuroscience, which she eventually completed in 2007.
Wow.
Boom.
Who knew? Blossom. PhD in neuroscience. We should get her on PhD.
Very cool. Well, we should get her on. We should get her on the PhD cast. Talk about cognitive psychology and neuroscience. One of the key inputs into Source PhD's fighting new operating system. So
brought to you by
Gillette.
And another cracking bit of innovation from our very own shores this week. The ABS is letting Australians run the town. The Australian Bureau of Statistics, in conjunction with Leo Burnett Sydney, has launched a mobile game called Run That Town. It allows players to get involved with census data and let them take control of any town or suburb in Australia. Have we had a chance to play with this?
Yes.
This is good, right? This is fun. Lauren, tell us all about it.
So the app is only on iPhone. Boo.
I'm also an Android user.
So
we're waiting.
So I think that's one fail there. However, I think it's a really fun app. It is really a great way to get people to understand, you know, the census data and how the government might use it, and it's just really interesting to, instead of just going, I filled in this 20-page survey and I never see anything with it again, I think it's really a great way to kind of connect with that and maybe want you to be more involved in the next survey. I know when I took it, I was super excited.
Ooh, a phone.
It was my first, it was the first census I got to be included in. So
I was on holiday when we did mine.
Oh.
So I was actually in Uluru when they did the census, and my whole family were here visiting. So we had to spend an hour of our holiday filling in the census.
But now you get to play a game and you can run.
Now I can be access that data, and my family have also. I feel like they're part of that little data set as well. It's a great use of innovation. Right? It's a great use of application to access data.
I think it's, two trends that obviously taps into. One would be data visualization, which came to the fore kind of really last year, but a great way of actually putting really quite complicated data and inputs and making it tangible for people. And then the other one, our classic favourite, gamification, of using that data and getting people to play with it and find interesting ways, and actually just brings it to life, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, because really, who is going to want to bother flicking through a 200-page pie charts and, you know, line bar charts and stuff of census data? You're not going to want to bother
that
doing
is
that.
Basically what we do quite a lot of time anyway.
True.
I think the other really nice spin of this is this kind of soft politics off the back of it around, I guess, how politicians and local government are making decisions, which is a lovely little spin around fill this out, because, you know, the core of where this data goes is you know, whether or not we put a church on the corner of such and such and such and such. So it was a lovely little soft politics spin on the same data. And as I say, I just wish I could play it on my HTC Excel One.
And do you think, like, a natural progression of that would be to tap into all those people playing and actually make decisions? How cool would that be?
Yeah.
That crowdsourcing.
Yeah.
How many
management.
People in Darlinghurst have just installed a pool in the Darlinghurst area?
Yeah.
Maybe we should get a pool in Darlinghurst.
Exactly. There we are. Obviously, only if you're an iTunes user.
Yes, yes, that's the only opinion that counts, apparently. Yeah.
I approved your library for Surrey Hills a few minutes ago. It's all good and cool. Also in big online digital news over the last week or so has been the $1.1 billion that Yahoo has paid for Tumblr. It's an extraordinary amount for a platform with no clear, obvious sign of revenue generation, right?
I disagree with that.
Go.
Essentially, they bought it for $4 a record. So what they've done is they've bought a mass of data and in the digital space to buy that sort of data for $4 a record is a bargain. So getting a lot of user data, a lot of content data, a lot of subject matter interests, all the rest of that wealth of data that they can now use not just within the Tumblr platform but in their wider assets. And to be honest, at $4 a record for 300 million active users, it's actually a bargain.
I think $1 billion, I'd want the Matrix, let alone a spreadsheet. A spreadsheet that valuable?
Absolutely. I guess the question is it valuable enough for Yahoo, and is it going to revolutionise them and their organisation? Because you kind of have to be honest and go, is it a little bit too little, too late? And I think actually what was interesting, there was commentary from The Onion on the day that happened, and it was the whole headline was around Google buys lots of girls' blogs to try and desperately bump up their data. Do you know what I mean? That for me feels like a little bit of a
Sorry.
It's just an example of big organisations, and not just digital, but just big organisations per se, really relying on buying in innovation from smaller players, new emerging players. Does this talk the fact that the big established players genuinely find it hard to innovate? The fact that radio industry didn't invent Spotify, the fact that the movie industry didn't invent Netflix, it can go on and on. No music label invented iTunes. Does this talk to the fact that innovation is really hard to make happen in big organisations?
I think absolutely it is. And you'll struggle to find even advertisers, media organisations to genuinely create innovation. The best way to do it is to buy someone else's thinking. That's just, for me, that's business politics, not anything else. So it's really hard to do that. So, yeah. You've got the Facebook example, you've got just loads of examples. Mobile, in this industry, loads of media organisations and parent companies turning to mobile and instead of creating their own offering, just kind of working with or buying parts of different organisations. And that, for me, is just the nature of business.
I think the nature of what technology is bringing us with mobile and all of the tools that are at our hand, it's not the job of Ford to invent cars anymore, you know. Everybody can be an innovator. Take a simple problem and now you know within a development community in India you can have it built in 24 hours for $36. So everybody's becoming an innovator, so hence big corporations are buying that from individuals
because they're going to want to have a critical mass. Who knows what these big corporations are investing in behind closed doors? They've probably got many fingers and many pies working with the likes of G's and all that kind of stuff, but then to make it profitable they're going to need to have a critical mass, which is why they're buying more platforms that we are more familiar with as a society.
Cool, and that's that for this week. The old adage that we're all car designers now, bring us home. A big thank you to Lauren Oldham. And Nicola.
Oh, sorry, I fell asleep there. Bye!
And Peter.
Thank you.
And Stuart.
Bye!
Peace out, that was PhDcast. It's good to be back. See you next week. Or listen.
See you.
Thanks for listening. To get more from PhD Australia, like us on Facebook at PhD Australia or hashtag us via PhD Australia.